Who let the dogs out?
Who let the dogs out?
It's time for Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, traditional small animal medicine and surgery, chiropractic, laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine. 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com. With us today, Dr. Carolyn Cannon, owner and chief vet at the Millerton Veterinary Practice. Hello, Dr. Cannon.
Hello, good morning.
We have a million, zillion, trillion questions for you.
All right, I'm ready.
All right, starting with Verlaine in the Bronx. Yesterday, I heard on the radio that the CDC just found out that in 2020, there were a lot of puppies sold with falsified rabies vaccinations. I didn't hear the whole story, just the headline, but that was enough to freak me out because my husband and I did buy a puppy last year. How would you know if a rabies certificate was a fake?
So, number one, I think if that were the case, I would have heard of it. We'd get something directly from the CDC or something from the state of New York or from the New York State Veterinary Medical Society. Have not heard that. I don't know what radio station that you're listening to, but it may be another one of those stories that doesn't have any truth to it. I don't believe that this is the case. I think a few years ago, there were some international rabies vaccines that were fake vaccines. I remember a thing about that. And it was, I think, in the Philippines. But, I haven't heard a thing about falsified rabies vaccine. You need to get there's a form that veterinarians have to fill out a rabies vaccine, but there's, especially for travel now between states, super strict laws about what puppies need to have to travel. Dogs need to have traveling between states, that because of all of the dogs and cats that are coming from the south, dogs mostly. There have been problems in the past few years about paperwork, et cetera. So they're very strict about what needs to come, and it does need to come from a veterinarian office. So I'm not sure. I mean, I haven't heard anything about that. Seen lots and lots and lots of puppies, but I don't believe that that's a truth.
And I just, again, as a civilian, would tend to agree with you. And one quick question: when is the first rabies vaccine? And then it lasts for a year, correct? And then you go on to the 3-year.
That's right. So that's a great question. So they need to be vaccinated in Connecticut and New York between 12 and 16 weeks of age, so by the age of 16 weeks. I believe that's the case in most states. I don't believe there are any states that go to 6 months. So puppies, typically, by the time they're 16 weeks, need to be vaccinated.
And again, I'm going to just do math for anyone who's listening. So even if that particular thing that was heard on the radio was true, which is dubious, shortly thereafter, depending on how old your dog was when you got it, you would need to get another rabies shot for him or her.
Yeah, so it would be the following year. I think that if anybody has a concern, you just call the number on the rabies certificate.
Right.
And they'll be able to verify whether or not that puppy received a vaccination.
All right. Simran in Red Oaks Mill, do dogs need to replenish salt or electrolytes after they have sweated a lot? If so, what should I give my dog after a long, hot hike? And if they don't need that, I'd be interested to hear why not.
That's a good question. So dogs don't, there are products out there that you can add to water that will replace electrolytes in dogs, but typically that's used with so really profuse, intractable diarrhea and vomiting. Of course, with vomiting, you don't want to give a dog a lot of water orally, but for diarrhea, it's not something that typically is used with dogs who do heavy work. And part of the reason is they don't sweat a lot. Unfortunately, they're not able to sweat except on the paws. Little bit, not sweating, but evaporating water from the tongue and the mouth, but that's really just water, not electrolytes. So dogs are typically not in need of, when they get really hot, they need to be cooled off. but they're not in need of electrolytes for that reason, because the sweat glands are so few on their bodies. So the sodium, potassium aren't being lost. The water's being lost, and so you get high, effectively, high numbers of sodium and chloride with dehydration. So the important thing is to think about cooling off your dog when you're going on a long hot hike. So you need to have some cool water available, or better yet, hike along a river. They can dip themselves in. My dogs did that on Sunday every, I don't know, along the Housatonic River. Every 12 feet they were going in the water. It was so hot. I went walking at 1 o'clock. So cooling them off is really important. Electrolytes, not so much, unless you're getting huge losses through the front or the back end.
And so for hikers along the Appalachian Trail, and I've seen many dogs, what do they do, carry a cloth? I'm serious. I mean, I know it sounds silly, but how do you cool off your dog on a hot day, or do you just let them go into the water?
Yeah, I mean, let them go into the water. You can just let them go in to cool their feet off if you have them on leash, you know?
Yep.
Or go in and sit right down and get covered with the cool water, and they will stay a lot cooler that way. And you have to be careful about hiking with dogs in this kind of weather, like it's going to be, you know, this summer with 90-degree weather. You have to be cognizant of you know, how old is your dog, how much coat do they have, and are you able to keep them cool on that kind of a hike, or just rest. You know, if you've got a breeze, you're going to be able to dissipate some heat that way. If nothing like that is happening, then cold water, drinking cold water and resting would be a way to keep them from becoming too hot.
All right, and I know this is probably silly, but I'm going to ask it anyway. If it's a hot day with high humidity, is that worse than just a hot temperature?
Yes, but
or
yes.
more.
Yes,
are the dogs going to get
hotter? Because the water, you know, because the heat with the water is not evaporating as rapidly from the tongue and mouth.
Right.
I don't know about the bottoms of the feet, if whether they'd be affected. But you know, with us, you know, if there's a little bit of a breeze, then that sweat will be cooled up, will cool you off a little bit.
Yep.
But no breeze at all, and really humid weather where you're not getting any evaporation is difficult. Makes things worse.
Okay. Rebecca in Tivoli, last time I took my two sibling cats to the vet for their booster shots. The vet asked if I wanted to have them check for diabetes. They're only a year old and they're both healthy, so why do you think he would ask? Is that just a standard practice now, or were they just trying to squeeze me for money? I've had many cats in my life, but never been asked this.
I'm not sure. That is not a routine thing. I think that what is somewhat routine is doing a baseline blood screen, like maybe a young adult profile is what we call it at my office, to get a nice baseline on what kidneys and liver are doing and blood glucose. But unless they are drinking a lot of water, showing signs of diabetes, I don't quite understand why you would have them screened unless they're really, really overweight. So that would be something that might be left out of this question. Cats who are obese are much more prone to diabetes over time.
All right. And again, I just have to give you credit because you are the great question determiner of what's missing, because usually there is something missing. And I don't know whether that's just a skill you've developed over years or whether you came with it, but props. Tasha in
Thanks.
New Milford, I'm trying to find alternative flea prevention, and I've read about the plant fleabane. It's apparently got a long history of being used as a pest repellent, but there's not much info out there on how one would use it. Do you know anything about it?
I do know. I've been asked this question before, and my understanding is it doesn't do a thing. It has no flea repellent activity whatsoever.
Right. I can believe that. But what I also believe is that what's happened is that something like fleabane at one time was perhaps mixed with some other things that did work. Because I know that in the 16th century, 17th century, for example, there was pest repellent that was made of more natural
mm-hmm.
things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was
many things, rosemary, right. lemongrass, things like that that do have. I don't know where fleabane is a pretty little daisy like flower, but I don't know why it was called fleabane. My understanding is that chemically it has nothing in it to repel fleas.
Right, and again, if people want to actually take the time to delve into not just the headline history of something, but it's easier to get an answer to that question and go, oh, hi, that's where that came from. And no, but if you take a mixture of XYZ, you might be able to do something. And we just talked about this recently, but is there any alternative flea thing? When I say alternative, non-chemical flea thing that you have found?
Well, vinegar supposedly does help. So if you, as a repellent, so you can kill them, you can sort of slow them down and pick them off with a soapy bath. Fleas are not able to withstand soaps, but because of their exoskeleton, but it doesn't kill all of them. But as far as repellent activity, then something like a mixture of vinegar and water apparently has some activity. It's just that your dog smells bad, and in fact, I don't know if they like it. I know that I've used the Tick Hex from Dr. Dobius and it's very vinegary, and my dogs, one of them acts like you're burning him, and he rolls around the grass, and he has an absolute fit, or rolls around the car, wherever he is, if you spray it on him. But I have read about trying to find some ideas about more natural flea and tick repellents, and my understanding is that a little bit of vinegar can help.
Do you hate the smell of vinegar? I happen to love it. So I'm just wondering, like, if you carried around a little spritzer with some vinegar water mixture, whatever it is.
Some people do love it, and I don't like it at all, and Davi doesn't like it at all either. So.
Yeah, and if you have multiple, I will just go on record as saying this. Just because you have multiple dogs doesn't mean they all like the same thing just because they live in the same house.
And that's right, just because they're a dog.
Yep, yeah, no, I wonder, do you have any idea what the mixture is? Is it like one-third, two-thirds, or is it just...
I have read before that you can use it half and half. I'm not sure that I would do that. I'd do maybe about a quarter of white vinegar with some water and see. I just don't know how effective it is for ticks.
Right.
And, the flea situation is more, if your dog's going to be around, they're not going to pick up fleas. From just going outside. They need to roll in a dead animal. They need to be around other dogs or, God forbid, go in someone's house that's got fleas.
Right. So some of us, though, going outside is not, like, it's not a, it's not 0% that they won't roll in something.
True.
So
absolutely.
That would be the only thing that I can think of.
Yeah.
It's a good tick flea distinction. It seems like we're sort of circling around the same things, but Mike in Winstead, my last dog, an English sheepdog, really appreciated getting his coat shaved down once the summer got hot. He had a very thick undercoat, and it cooled him down a lot. The dog I have now has medium-length fur without an undercoat. Can you shave a dog without an undercoat? Should you? I don't want her to get sunburned or anything.
You can shave any dog, but I wouldn't. If you've got medium length hair and no undercoat, there's no reason to shave them. Really, the sunburn is a real potential issue, and the heat can be controlled in all the ways that we talked about.
Okay, and sunburn, some sunscreens are just worse. Sunscreens that humans use can be pretty terrible too, even though everybody thinks that they're just terrific.
You don't want any. You don't want to put sunscreen anywhere where the dog can lick it off. So that's the big difference is we always have to think about, why can't we use human products? And it's because the animals lick the stuff off their coat. They don't like anything on the coat. You can use it. There are cats who have, a propensity to squamous cell carcinoma because they're in the sun and they're white-coated, and they're especially on the pinnas of the ear. So if you've got a cat who, isn't going to do a lot of grooming, you can, or sometimes they don't have a lot of feeling up there, so you can get away with some sunscreen. But otherwise, they groom it off. They groom it, and they lick it, and they groom it, and they lick it, and probably not great over a long period of time.
Right.
So you have to think of those things. So, yeah, if you've got a dog who's got a nice coat protecting, with no undercoat protecting their skin, then leave it alone.
Okay. All right, Nick in Queens, I'm going to be babysitting my neighbor's puppy soon. Yay. I was told not to let him interact with any other dogs because he hasn't had all of his shots yet. I'm curious, whose protection is that for, the other dogs or the puppies?
So it's for the puppies. This is a great question and one I get often. Puppies are not fully protected against the diseases that we vaccinate against until they've had a number of vaccines. And part of the reason for that is the developing immune system, and part of the reason is they can carry antibodies from the mother's milk and from the being inside the mom's uterus. They can have antibodies that will interact with the vaccine and make it not so effective. So you want to start vaccinating them. The whole science of vaccination tells us we want to start them when they're around 8 weeks old, although many breeders and veterinarians will start sooner at 6 weeks. I like to wait until they're 8 weeks old and start them then, and they have to have at least two vaccines in order to have full protection. The problem being is we don't know how effective that first vaccine is. So what we do is 8 weeks, 12 weeks, and 16 weeks or thereabouts with the distemper and parvo combination vaccine. And 2 weeks after that 16-week vaccine, then your pup should be fully protected. So you can see you're talking about 18 weeks of age. And so you have to be careful when they're younger than that, and we've talked about this once before. You have to weigh the benefits of socialization with other dogs with the risk of infection. And so you'd like to have playtime and interaction with dogs belonging to people that you know. So you know that they are fully vaccinated, that they're not going to dog shows or other kinds of events. There are lots and lots of dog events now. It might be potentially exposed to things that they would bring back to your puppy. So if you've got a family member or a neighbor with a 1 or 2-year-old dog, they're fully vaccinated, and they're not going anywhere, those are the dogs you want to choose to have your puppy interact with. And you do need to set those interactions up. They need to get out there and be purposely socialized. There's nothing worse than having a dog who doesn't get along with other dogs when you're trying to do stuff with your, with fun things with your pet.
Especially, if you start them young, they don't come with that. They don't come
right
with that. It's just one of those things. But I remember also years and years ago, a family member didn't want to bring their a pet to my house because of not because of fear of maulage, but because of airborne viruses, which I just couldn't. I couldn't get off the floor. But that was based from the vet's recommendation. Although again, we know I'm somewhat biased. It could have been a zip code thing, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, also, this question was from someone in Queens, and I imagine in New York, it's much more difficult. So how do you get your dog's going to be out there walking on the street and with all of these other dogs? And
well,
so it's important, I think, not to go to a dog park. Don't go to the park where everyone's got their dogs off a leash, because you don't know who you're encountering.
And again, 1,000 years ago, when I went into the shark business, and trying to housebreak, I mean, I will tell anyone right here and right now that if you're trying to housebreak a dog in the city, move to the country. But you were told not to put the dog on the street. The dog really, feet weren't supposed to touch the pavement until well past the it was actually supposed to be 4 months, but nobody ever.
Yeah, and that's not practical.
It's totally impractical.
So there is some sort of a happy medium that has to be reached. Right. We need to have some faith in our dog's immune systems if we're taking care of them well and feeding them well, and not overloading with a ton of vaccines all at once. Try to find out whether, you know, the mother had appropriate vaccinations, and all of those things can be really complex and difficult, especially if you're rescuing a dog from the South and you don't know anything about the parents. So you have to use your own risk assessment in your head and say, you know, probably not a good idea to let dogs sniff noses with your puppy, dogs that you don't know on the street. You probably don't want to take your dog to places where there's a lot of dogs congregating. If you don't have a yard at all, then, clearly you've got to go out somewhere and allow them to go potty.
And again, as someone who did this before, it's completely doable. You just have to be conscientious about the things that it all goes back to. No one knows what they don't know until they know it, and it's a question of just communicating and asking. And that's why this is such a good question. It's like now Nick knows, and he will know forever, and then he can go play with the pup, and he'll know why and how, and everyone will move on from there.
There you go. That's great.
Emily in Waterbury, we've got 2.5 minutes. This question comes from my 9-year-old son, Oliver. Why do dogs lick themselves after they get wet in the rain? Does their saliva have something in it that makes their fur drive faster?
Well, most dogs don't like to be wet, so I don't believe that there's anything in the fur saliva that makes the fur dry faster, but they don't usually like to be wet, and there's no evolutionary advantage to being wet unless it's really, really hot out. They will just lick the water off because, you know, if you think about dogs in the wild having to live outside, the wetter you are, the colder you're going to be. So it helps to dry them off more quickly if they're getting the excess water off their bodies. My dogs won't lick themselves dry when it's super hot out. They come home and they're pretty wet. They shake, they're pretty wet, and they just dry out on the deck. So I don't see a lot of licking, sometimes of the feet when there's mud there. So that's an interesting question.
Do your dogs like to shake in the house only?
They don't typically shake in the house. No, they shake, they shake before we get back in the car from our walk by the river.
You're lucky. There are certain dogs, I don't know whether it's their ownership or their just personality, that like to wait until they're in enclosed space.
It's like those outdoor cats who don't go potty outdoors. They wait till they get back into the litter pan. People tell me that all the time.
Yeah, or some people that I know that just have to wait till they get back to their house. So I kind of understand what the cat's up to.
Right.
I'm sorry. Thank you very much, Dr. Cannon. It's always a pleasure. This has been Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com. Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? Who?